Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. We're coming off the back of an international break, so I'm hoping Mr. Langdon is rested, rejuvenated ahead of domestic football returning. Lots to get through this week. We'll be joined later on in the show by Dan Childs, his EFL take as well. Mark, how's things?
I'm all right, Jack. You can tell that I've been very busy. I've not even had a shave for a few days. I've been feeling very hairy. But yeah, apart from a travel nightmare, broken Britain on Monday, tried and failed to get to Leeds. It's been a good international.
And you didn't even get to your intended destination?
No, not on the Monday. I had to try again on the Tuesday. And by the time I did get to Leeds, the sausage and egg McMuffin was well deserved. It has to be said.
Our producer Will, Mark, constantly telling us, you know, we're now a video show. We're on YouTube, so let's keep plugging it. You calling yourself hairy, is that a sell? Do you think we'll be inundated by women, or is that a turn off?
Well, I mean, this is on the request of my wife. She's demanding I grow a beard. I don't think I've got the patience for it. I'm about, 4 or 5 days in. But okay. We'll see how it goes.
I think it suits you, Matt. So if you are listening, head over to YouTube and you get to see Mark in his new way. We have had an international break. Mark, England, it was a successful 1-4. I mean, I guess the link into all of these is, you know, the game, the result. I just want to talk about Jude Bellingham because, I mean, I keep forgetting how young he is. You know, he's playing like kind of a 28-year-old in the absolute prime of his career and yet still so young. Remarkable talent we've got on our hands.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the fact that he kind of does it out of the public eye, really, in terms of sort of the UK viewers, really. You know, you play for Real Madrid, it feels like it should be big. But of course, where it's only on La Liga TV in Britain, it makes it difficult, really, I think, for most people to keep track of just how well he's doing. You see the goals, you read about it, but you know, if he was playing for Manchester City, for instance, you know, you'd be reminded of it every 3 or 4 days, wouldn't you? You know, being able to watch it, as you say, remarkable talent. I do think that the comparisons with Gaz are good in and strong in one way, because you know, the way that he kind of just lit up a midfield is very much the way that Bellingham does, and the way that he drives past players again is something that Gazza did. But where Gazza was immature and probably still is, Bellingham is the complete opposite. Absolute, like, he was a leader for Borussia Dortmund. He is the leader for Real Madrid. The amount of late goals he's already scored this season kind of just took on that Zidane shirt as if it was nothing. And for England, you're right in saying that it does feel like he's 28. You feel like he's been there for a decade. The way, again, he's bossing people around, he's dominating the ball. I suppose Harry Kane's probably the first name on the team sheet, given he's the record goal scorer. But Bellingham can't be far behind him now, and he's made that number 10 position his own. And you know, I think we now kind of know that England will go into the sort of Euros playing with Bellingham off Kane, because anything else would be, I think, ridiculous from Southgate.
It was a nice link there, Mark, because I wanted to chat about Southgate. And I guess we're kind of going over trodden paths already with this discussion. Do you think he's capable of leading England on to winning a major trophy?
Yeah, I mean, I think if England win it, it won't necessarily be because of Southgate. I suppose if you look at where
we lose it will be because of it, or not losing it, so to say. But if we say
it depends where you go out. The Euros, I was disappointed with the way that he managed the final. Felt the subs could have come on earlier. You know, as the game got away from England, he didn't really have an idea on how to change it. Against France in the World Cup, I don't think England did much wrong. They did play aggressively. Kane missed a penalty. I thought they were the better team against France. So I think it depends. If England don't win, it would depend how they go out. But there's no doubt in my mind that England are the favourites to win the Euros. You just look at the depth of talent in that side. And, I don't see another team that comes that close to them, really. I mean, France is the obvious one, and in France would be, I would say, the second best side going into it. Germany under Julian Nagelsmann, now maybe they become more of a factor. Under Hansi Flick, it was going terribly wrong, but I don't think there's a huge amount for England to fear. That's not sort of arrogance and sort of, this kind of typical hyped up England. Just look at, I mean, they've got about three or four right backs that would walk into most teams. Stones is world class centre back. I think Luke Shaw has come on a lot. I know he's injured at the moment. You've got Shaw and Chilwell at left back. You've got Rice and Bellingham as the as two in midfield, with probably one more to come in there. Saka, Foden, Grealish, Madison, Rashford, in sort of the wider positions. I might have even forgot of a
Exciting,
couple. And
yeah.
then you've got Kane up front. So, I mean, Pickford in goal is kind of, I suppose, been a question mark over him, but rarely let England down. And then there's the sort of Harry Maguire situation, where I don't think he should be in the team. But again, he hasn't actually done that much wrong when he's worn the England shirt. So, and at international level, most teams have got a problematic position, or maybe somebody that's not ideal in a position. So, England and France are the two standout teams. But I would say that of those, England, are the team to beat, and they deserve to be favourites.
You're exciting me, Mark. Great week for England. It was also a successful week for Scotland. They have qualified, and well done to them. And a big win for Wales, Mark, as well.
Yeah, did not see that coming, Jack,
No,
against
not at all. I mean,
Croatia.
just a remarkable result for them.
Yeah, I mean, Wales were looking like it was going to have to be, via the back door, with the playoffs as their sort of best route in. Now they've given themselves a chance to go and do it automatically. We're missing some big players: Brennan Johnson, Aaron Ramsey, obviously all, Bale had departed before that. The form was pretty terrible going into it. There was a lot of negativity from the crowd towards the manager, Rob Page, and then they've gone and beaten, a Croatia team that's past their best, but still one that, as we saw in the last World Cup, and as we've seen, in various tournaments in the last decade, are still a Nations League not that long ago, a difficult side to put away. So to beat them, what was a great result. And yeah, for Scotland, obviously beaten by France in that friendly, but the job was done before that. You look at their side, and actually they've got a lot of players now that ply their trade in the Premier League at a good standard. I suppose the what happened there with the French game is that once you get a couple of players that are not playing, that squad depth is maybe something to concern Steve Clarke. But their best 11 should give a good account of themselves at the Euros.
Absolutely. Anything else to note from the international? I did see a nasty injury for Neymar on Brazil GC. I mean, he's getting to an age now that could be sort of career ending.
ACL, yeah. I mean, obviously, gone to Saudi Arabia, so in some respects, it almost career-ending that move in itself. But yeah, I mean, a big blow for Neymar. The amount of injuries he has picked up. I know there've been question marks over his lifestyle, and sometimes, has that contributed to some of them? I mean, you can't say that for this ACL injury. There's Copa America coming up. It's a long way back for him. You're right. Yeah, I mean, hard to say that he's like he hasn't fulfilled his potential when you look at all the trophies he's won. Just maybe on that international stage, it's just so many injuries have just like ruined what, two World Cups for him. And now he's got to pick himself up again. So yeah, I suppose just one last thing, from Neymar to San Marino. San Marino scoring a goal, and there will have been many people that probably had Denmark to win to nil in their acca. So San Marino scoring their first competitive goal for a couple of years is going to be a big blow, I would have thought, to a lot of the international football acca backers.
Yeah, saw one of our followers actually, Mark. I think it was a tenfold. A lot of shorties in there, but it was the Denmark game that let them down with them failing to keep a clean sheet. Well done to San Marino. Let's get on to Premier League action, Mark. It's good to have it back. We'll start with our big match, Chelsea against Arsenal. This one, 5:30 on Saturday. Plenty of Saturday football, which is mightily exciting. Chelsea, 21-10. The draw, 12-5, 13-10. Arsenal, Mark, I think if we would have previewed this game 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think it would have been a fairly routine conversation. Actually, now it feels quite evenly poised.
Really looking forward to it. Obviously, we've chose this game over the Merseyside Derby as our big match. I think we're right to do so, Jack, because if you know, a local derby is big news to the people that support the teams. But I think if you sort of said, well, what's just the bigger game, it is Chelsea against Arsenal. And for the reasons there that you mentioned, because Chelsea have started to pick up. I think as well, if you looked at Chelsea, they were actually on sort of expected goals. They were doing okay anyway. And, you know, they were just not getting the rub of the green, really. And that started to change. I suppose you could argue the fixtures have been nice enough for them. Most of the teams have gone to Burnley, haven't they, and sort of won. And, you know, that Fulham game, they had it wrapped up nice and early, but you still got to win that match. So, yeah, that they are starting to pick up. And for Arsenal, of course, we haven't spoken since they beat Manchester City. That was the last game before the international break. You know, that for some people was the sign that they're now ready to, you know, to go on and win a title, that they've managed to down sort of, you know, the champions. This is a hard game, I think, at Stamford Bridge against Chelsea. They've done well against Chelsea in recent times, Arsenal, but this might be sort of a tougher game than some of the more recent fixtures they've had in this eagerly contested London derby.
I was going to say that victory for Arsenal against Man City, almost, you know, just kind of getting rid of a bit of a mental block, seemingly, because it'd been so long since they'd beaten City. I mean, that could be huge for them going forwards.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the mental block, that's fair enough, because what was it, 12 straight Premier League defeats? It's pretty ridiculous, really, to lose 12 in a row to anybody when you're as good as Arsenal, and you know the amount of sort of talented players they've had down the years that would have sort of partaken in that fixture. What I would say though is that I don't necessarily go along with the because you've beaten City, you know, that suddenly means something more than just the 3 points, because you know, the Martinelli shot hits the Ake on the face and rebounds in. It could quite easily have hit Ake's face, rebounded wide, and Arsenal would have played exactly the same way, doing exactly the same things and got a different result. And that's the kind of beauty and madness of football. I was more disappointed, if we're sort of going over that game, I was disappointed with City. I thought they were really negative in that last half an hour and handed the initiative to Arsenal. I think as the game wore on, Arsenal started to feel like there wasn't, you know, there wasn't that much to fear from City. Like, you know, we can go on and win it. Declan Rice, I thought, was fantastic in the midfield, really drove Arsenal forward, perhaps helped him that, you know, Jorginho was alongside him, kind of had one eye on the sort of defensive side of things. And Rice was able to sort of do what he likes to do, which is actually get involved further up the pitch. Martinelli made a difference when he came on. You know, they did it without Saka. I wasn't massively impressed with Jesus's decision making or Nketiah's overall play, but defended solidly enough. Maybe the goalkeeper wobbly, but you know, the actual defenders did well. Rice was excellent. You know, it bodes well. But like I say, it would have done the same thing if it would have finished 0-0. It's just you just get that extra fillip, don't you, of having beaten City and also taking a couple of points off them, really, in what could be key come the end of the season.
How do we see Chelsea's trajectory from here? Because it's been really tough to kind of work out where they're at as a team and club at the moment.
Yeah, I'm still not entirely sure, you know, where they'll finish. I'm pretty certain it will be sort of much better than what they kind of currently are, points per game. They've got a lot of injuries, or they've had a lot of injuries. New manager, you know, there's a lot of reasons really why the start has been slow, and we've also had the expected goals that I've already mentioned, where they left a bit on the table. When Nkunku comes back, Reece James, you're going to see, I think, a better Chelsea. You know, Chilwell and James have barely played together really in the last couple of years. Been a real blow for them that they've not been able to sort of get both of those players sort of fit and available. Raheem Sterling's playing very well. I suppose it's whether Nkunku can score the goals that have been left on the table. You know, Nicholas Jackson has sort of not performed as well as what they expected. Goal stats would have suggested Broya got the goal against Fulham, but is he at the sort of required standard for a team that wants to, at the very least, be qualifying for the Champions League? So I think Pochettino needs time. They'll just organically get better. I don't think you can spend the money that they've spent and just not be better than they are. So it's not going to take much for them to sort of start climbing the table. If you were to ask me where they would finish this season, I think the slow start might cost them a Champions League spot.
Okay. With all of that being said, Mark, what's the selection for this game?
I'm going to go for under 2.5 goals. If you look at Arsenal, you know, 3 clean sheets in their, you know, 4 Premier League games, sort of looking, sort of being much more defensive minded, really. And we've seen that with the way that they played against City. I think even though the games against Tottenham and and Manchester United were higher scoring, if you actually looked at the way that Arsenal played, I don't think they were as aggressive as they were last year. I think that it is something that Arteta's working on for them to be, I suppose, more responsible in the defensive side of the work. And this is a difficult away game. 4 of the last 5 Chelsea Premier League games have been under 2.5 goals as well. I've spoken about the fact that they're not really finishing off their chances. So this might be a slightly cagey London derby.
Yeah, looking forward to it nonetheless. Plenty more Premier League games to get through. We'll start with the Merseyside derby. Yeah, it's Liverpool against Everton, Saturday, 12:30. Liverpool, heavy favourites, 3-10. The draw, 5-1, 15-2, if you fancy Everton. Mark, I mean, on paper and the way that the book is priced, it's very one-sided. Can you see it going any differently?
Well, I mean, Everton's attacking expected goals is absolutely wild because it's, according to FBref, it's like 14.7, which puts them at a very high level around kind of Manchester City.
Wow.
So that's interesting. I think they've had a very easy sort of set of fixtures, which has contributed to that. They've often been chasing games, which again contributes to that. So maybe don't take that as you know, a kind of a sign of where Everton are. I think this is a difficult game for Everton more than one way. Psychologically, spoken about maybe how Arsenal got a big boost there. Everton, when they go to Anfield, and I know they ended the hoodoo a couple of years ago, but generally speaking, when they go to Anfield, they feel like they're beaten a lot of the time before they've even stepped off the bus. And so I'm going to go for Liverpool to win and over 2.5 goals. That does play into the part that maybe, you know, Everton are slightly more attacking than we've seen in or expected under a Sean Dyche side. Liverpool, 7 of their 8 Premier League games have gone over 2.5. I think Jurgen Klopp is building a very attack-minded team with the intention of blowing away kind of the bottom half sides. And, you know, Everton, I think, are a bottom half team.
Okay. Let's take a look at Brentford against Burnley, Mark. Brentford favourites 3-4, draw 14-5, 10-3. Burnley, have you been happy with the way that Burnley have adapted to the Premier League? Because I think you'll always get one of these sides, won't you, coming up from the Championship who've played free-flowing football. We've seen it with Norwich before, we've seen it with Leeds. It happens every season. And then how they adapt to the Premier League it has differing results. What have you made of Burnley?
Yeah, I mean, I was quite critical of them early on in the season when I was looking at their sort of team sheet. I was sort of wondering who some of the players were. You know, it felt quite a different side, really, to the one that came up. They had a few loan players, didn't they? That are kind of, you think someone like Teller, for instance, that had been influential. And I was critical. Then, if you actually assess the fixture list, they've lost to Tottenham, Man City, Aston Villa, Newcastle, Man United, and Chelsea. I mean, in a normal season, they're going to lose like most of those games. It just so happens that they've all been thrown in together. The two games that you would have said were against teams more at their level, They drew at Nottingham Forest and they beat Luton. So I think Vincent Kompany will be drumming that into the squad that, although the kind of league table says they're struggling, been a hard start. And this is much more a game at the type of level that they should feel sort of more comfortable competing at. And I'm going to go for Burnley or draw double chance in this game. Brentford, Rico Henry, Ivan Toney, massively influential players. They've caught dropped the ball big time at Old Trafford. Sort of, I was going to say last week, it was a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? But last time out were those two late goals they conceded. I'm not sure about how the goalkeepers, if they've Flecken and Strakosa have played in goal for them this season. And I don't think either has played as well as what David Raya has done. So to lose Raya, Rico Henry, and Ivan Toney from that sort of successful side, they're big holes to fill. And I'm not sure they've done that quite so perfectly as they would have liked at the moment.
Okay, let's take a look at Bournemouth against Wolves. 11 to 8 Bournemouth, 12 to 5 the draw, 2 to 1 Wolves. Mark, which way do you see this one going?
I'm going to go in the Gary O'Neill derby. I'm going to go for a draw. Obviously, Bournemouth, sacked Gary O'Neill. It was criticised at the time. Iriola had a body of work in Spanish football that suggested Bournemouth were going to be very exciting. I think they've had a hard run of games at home. They lost to Tottenham. They lost to Arsenal. But they did do okay in draws at home to West Ham and Chelsea. So it's not like all is lost for them. This is an important time because they were, blitzed by Everton, weren't they, as well, before the international break. So I think Iriola sort of needs to get something on the board. And this is an opportunity. Wolves picked up well recent times, 4 points from the Man City game and Aston Villa. I watched their game at Luton recently away from home. I wasn't impressed, even when it was 11-11. So, I'd be hard pressed to want to back them to win at a relatively short price, but I'm not sure Bournemouth are in the mood to win this one either.
Okay, let's take a look at Manchester City against Brighton. 4-11 City, 9-2 the draw, 6-1 Brighton. I must say, I think I mentioned this on the last podcast we filmed together. I haven't been overly impressed with Brighton this season,
I
really. I
thought he was
mean,
going to say Man City. I was like nodding,
no. Well,
thinking he was going to say Man City.
to be fair with City against Arsenal, you mentioned it earlier, I thought they were really kind of off the boil, quite lethargic at points. I mean, obviously, it's Manchester City. They will hit the ground running at some stage. But no, Brighton, I think I want to see more from. Maybe expectations are just so high now.
Yeah, I sort of know. I can get that vibe that, because you're now rating them as
Yeah.
a kind of team that, could be top six, maybe pushing for Champions League. That in itself is quite an accolade, isn't it, for Brighton, that you're now
Absolutely.
judging them at that kind of level. And it is difficult, I think, when those expectations are there to perform at that standard every single week. They've got the Europa League, which is obviously going to complicate matters. They've had some injuries, lost Caicedo late on in the transfer window. But before the international break, they got that 2-2 draw against Liverpool. That was a blow because our treble had the sort of Liverpool sort of to land
It
that.
was a
So
weird game, wasn't it?
it was a weird game. Yeah, I mean, I think I do know what you mean, but I'm sort of not. I wasn't getting too giddy about Brighton before a ball was kicked. I still think if they can finish a roundabout Europa League, that's still a great season for somebody with Brighton's wage bill. And so therefore, I think they've made a sort of satisfactory start to the season for sure. In terms of this game, I'm going to go over 3.5 goals. All Brighton's league and Europa League games so far this season have been over 3.5. I think they'll attack Man City, and that might sort of spark City into life somewhat because nearly every game's the same for City now, where teams just defend deep and look to frustrate them. This is an occasion where there might be some space for them to exploit. I think it's a dangerous game. I definitely wouldn't be putting Man City in the Akkers because I think Brighton have got that potential, but prefer the goals bet because that gives you a couple of ways to win.
Okay, Newcastle Palace, Mark. 1-2 Newcastle, 10-3 the draw, 6-1 Palace. Newcastle going well.
They are, obviously got the Tonali sort of issue hanging over them now, where
What's the latest with him?
well, I mean, the reports in Italy this week said that he's been betting on games involving AC Milan when he was actually at Milan, which it's frowned upon even more so in Italy than it would be in the UK. He can definitely expect a ban. I think it's just how long the ban will be.
Despite this happening in Italy, the ban can still come into effect with
Yeah,
Newcastle.
they these kind of Italian authorities will expect it to be respected
Sure.
throughout. It's illegal for footballers to bet on football in Italy. It was also been reported that it was with sort of on the black market as well. So he wasn't sort of walking into his local betting shop and filling out a coupon. It was on the black market, which is another issue that he's got. I think that's going to be a problem for Newcastle. But on the plus side, I think Botman expected to be back. A couple of other injuries have had time to clear up. Isak didn't go on international duty or withdrew, but he's expected to be okay. I'm going to go for Newcastle to win and under 3.5 goals. Palace have got a lot of injuries at the moment. Eze, the obvious sort of big one, really. And then, as far as Newcastle are concerned, that sort of 8-0 against Sheffield United, kind of the exception to the rule there. Kind of, they're grinding it out at home to Brentford and against Burnley. And a Roy Hodgson team's going to defend, be compact and difficult to beat. So Newcastle to win and under 3.5 goals.
Okay, good stuff. Forest against Luton, 4-6 Forest, 11-4 for the draw, 9-2 Luton. I think if you're a Luton fan, Mark, these are the types of games you're travelling to, just hoping for a point or something to just give you some degree of hope.
Well, I mean, they won at Everton recently, so
But that's what I
yeah,
mean.
I'm
In terms of building on that, these are the games
yeah, yes,
I'm
right,
looking
because
at.
they've lost a couple of home games, haven't they, since then? So I think the pressure here though is more on Nottingham Forest. I mean, how many games are Nottingham Forest going to in the Premier League expecting to win? There aren't many. Maybe Sheffield United at home when they did win, albeit with a late goal. I'm going to go for the bit of evens around for both teams to score. I sort of taking on board what you were saying here. This feels like a game where both teams all believe that they can get, Forest will believe they should be winning, and Luton won't have too many better opportunities away from home to pick up points. So I think it will be quite an attack-minded game. And Luton, if you look at their record against sort of the non-big six teams, they have scored in five of those six matches. So it's not that there is a lack of sort of obvious quality there, but they are getting men forward and that they're putting balls into the box, and that just causes problems.
The late game on Saturday, Sheffield United against Manchester United, 8 o'clock on Saturday. Let's take a look at the prices for this one. 6-1 Sheffield United, 4-1 for the draw, 2-5 Manchester United. I feel like I keep asking this question, Mark, but I'm going to continue to ask it. The mood around Manchester United at the moment, is it salvageable under the current kind of, well, I guess we know the situation, the
Regime,
ownership model,
yeah.
but the manager as well.
Well, certainly more savable than it was after 88 minutes against Brentford a couple of weeks ago. When, I mean, can you imagine how bad that international break would have been for Ten Hag if they'd lost at home to Brentford? It would have been brutal for him. I think the ownership issue is complicated. Like, getting somebody now potentially coming in, but not owning the whole club, but in charge of football matters. It's hard to know how that relationship will work. It doesn't fill me with great confidence, I think, if I was a sort of Manchester United fan, that things are suddenly going to improve off the pitch. In terms of on the pitch, if you were to give Ten Hag the benefit of the doubt, you would say, I mean, at least judging when the players are fit. I mean, there've been so many injuries at United this season. Martinez, Varane, Shaw, that's three of the back four, isn't it? In midfield, Mount hasn't really been able to get going. But then you could say, well, when he has played, he hasn't been amazing. Onana, big money signing, has Well, he's been less than amazing. He's been at fault for a number of goals already. I think the one bright spark and hope for me is that they've spent a lot of money on Højlund, but he looks a threat to me. He's definitely added something up front that United didn't have. And when you've got somebody with that kind of potential, I think there's always hope that, you know, better things are to come. And this should be a very winnable game for Manchester United. I'm going to go for United to win an under 3.5 goals. A bit like what I said with Newcastle. That ain't nil, though, for Sheffield United. It was real the outlier, really, on their other sort of defeats, if you like. They were beaten 2-1 against City and Tottenham, 2-0 at West Ham. So, you know, that ain't nil. I'm not sure where it came from, but not expecting it to be as easy for Manchester United, but for them still to get the job done comfortably enough.
OK, just the one game on the Sunday this week. It's Aston Villa against West Ham, 10-11 the home side, 13-5 for the draw, 14-5 if you're backing West Ham. And I guess two clubs here, Mark, will be relatively pleased with their start.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, Aston Villa being sort of all or nothing really for them. There's been some bad results and some very good ones. West Ham, I think, had a hard run of games. You look at the games that they've lost only to Liverpool and to Man City. So, you know, David Moyes can be definitely pleased with results. I know not all West Ham fans are delighted with the performances. If you look at like possession stats, they're one from bottom. And then if like sort of in terms of like passing, they're like bottom three for short passes and medium passes and completed passes and all of those kind of, I suppose, what tends to make a team feel more attractive. And so stylistically, maybe West Ham are not doing anything special, but the results are clear and obvious, you know, for all to see, and they're doing well in the Europa League again. This game I found very tricky. I'm not so sure it's going to be a sort of goal filled as what the bookmakers think. And so I was looking at a couple of ways to kind of oppose that angle. And the best I can find is there's a bit of 6-4 around for no in the both teams to score market. So at least one team not to score. Now, both teams have scored in 7 of West Ham's 8 games this season. But if you look at the sort of shot stats, they've not been wild games. They only had a handful of shots against Newcastle in that 2-2. So I think at some stage that West Ham goal trend is going to kind of reverse itself and get more in line with their sort of statistics. And it might come against Aston Villa. I think from Villa's point of view, have they got that kind of the guile to open up a kind of solid West Ham side? And then if they do get in the lead, have West Ham got that creativity to come back? So cheering on a nil-nil, because that'd be perfect. But even if one team does get in front, I'm not sure the other one has got that sort of creativity to get back into the game.
Lots of goals angles this week, Mark. We'll see if that continues
tricky
in the next
coupon. Tricky coupon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've put you off for half an hour here, Mark, talking about your beloved Spurs. So I'll give you a few minutes in the limelight here. I mean, just in terms of everything you could have wished for this season, you've probably most of those dreams have been ticked off, haven't they?
Oh, yeah, for sure. To head into the international break, top of the Premier League, don't think anyone realistically would have expected that, particularly after selling Kane and not really replacing him. And all the kind of talk pre-season was that it would take a while for sort of the Postecoglou effect really to sort of be seen in the pitch, and that when he'd gone elsewhere, it had taken time and, you know, results had slow, and that first half at Brentford was far from amazing, and I think there was trepidation. Even the first half against Manchester United could easily have gone into that one behind, but they didn't. They've come out of it, obviously got the dramatic winners against Liverpool and Sheffield United, and then showed a different side to themselves at Luton last time out, when dominated the game, could have been 2 or 3 up before Bissouma was sent off. And then second half, with 10 men to go on and win the game, even against Luton, it's not an easy job that. And they defended really well, and it just helps just build that bond, I think, between manager, players and supporters. And did you see the I think Sam Matterface on TalkSport said that he walked past the dressing room and Ireland's in the stream was blaring out of the away dressing room at Kenilworth Road, and that's sort of now trying to become the vibe anthem from the supporters back to the team. So you might even get a version of it in the game against Fulham.
How do you see this kind of what way are you playing it from a betting perspective?
Yeah, gonna sort of completely change tack now and go for Fulham plus one on the Asian handicap. So you get your money back if Tottenham win by one goal. I've mentioned some of those dramatic late wins. So, when they play against a low block, Tottenham haven't always found it easy to open up teams, even with James Maddison in good form. And I think that this will be a struggle for Spurs without Bissouma. Big loss to them in the midfield. Don't forget, Fulham did draw against Arsenal already this season, so they've got a bit of form in the book against a sort of a big six side in North London. So not going to be easy for Tottenham. They had a few injuries over the international break. Romero, Son, and Sarr. I think they're all going to play, but maybe not at absolute 100% at the moment. So yeah, a tricky game, I think.
It does feel like going into every game at the moment, Son is kind of on the, leaving it late because there's always, it seems to be kind of just niggles sort of
Yeah,
surrounding him.
I was straight on to my man in Korea sort of on yesterday morning to find out the latest on Son. He insists he's okay. I've had the word. You've got to remember we've got a business in South Korea. So I've got many I've got ins in South Korea, and I'm hearing Sonny's okay.
South Korean correspondents on Bets Club. Absolutely brilliant. Right. I think that's the Premier League rounded off. Time to catch up with Dan Charles to discuss all things EFL. If you want some free football bets this season, we've got you covered. Simply head to racingpost.com/free bets, and there you'll find over £200 worth of them for you to use this season. That's racingpost.com/free bets. Always a pleasure to be joined by Dan Childs. EFL action returning. Of course, there were some games going on during the international break. Dan, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Jack. Yeah, I'm glad to have a full complement of games back. It was quite a sparse selection last week.
Absolutely. Now we'll start with your team in focus and this week's side, Dan. I feel when we're kind of approaching the season and we're talking about anti-post selections, the team you're about to mention are always in consideration for promotion. Talk us through what you've got your eye on at the moment.
Yep, Mansfield up down in League Two. I mean, they're one of only two unbeaten teams in the EFL at the moment, which, I mean, not a surprise that there's only two because we're quite a way into the season. But Portsmouth are unbeaten in League One, Mansfield unbeaten in League Two. Watched their game against Notts County, was on Sky last weekend. Big derby match between two promotion chasing teams. Mansfield, went behind in about 2 or 3 minutes and come back to win 4-1. I mean, they were absolutely superb on the day. I've been following them through the season. I've noticed they've drawn a lot of games, but a lot of them games they looked like they were dominating, including the game against Wrexham. They drew 0-0, dominated that game. Wrexham were really fancied, in the markets to go well this season. So I've kind of been keeping my eye on them, and to do what they did at Notts County, not wasn't just the victory; it was the manner of it. Luke Williams, the Notts County manager, who's very, very honest after every post match interview after the game. He's asked, what went wrong there, and he said it was nothing to do really with my side. We've just played against by far the best team we've come up against in the division. So, you take it from Luke Williams there that Mansfield are a serious force to be reckoned with.
One to keep an eye on.
One thing I would add there with Mansfield as well is they're doing this without some key players. I mean, they've got three long-term injured players at the moment: Alfie Kilgore, Stephen Quinn, and Reece Oates, who are all big players for them. They were starting at the start of the season, have all got long-term injuries. So the fact that they're doing it without three key players says, even more about them. And each of those players at some stage will be back to strengthen them even more.
Absolutely, mightily impressive. Mansfield, keep them on the radar. Dan, three selections for you this week across the divisions of the EFL. We'll start in the Championship, and I don't think I'm going to like what I'm about to hear.
Not going to like this one, Jack. No, it's going to go with Leeds away to Norwich. I mean, in the table, there's actually only 2 points between these sides, but which kind of seemed a bit strange because the mood of the two sets of fans is very, very different at the moment. You kind of feel that Leeds are going one way, going climbing up the table, and Norwich seems to be going in the opposite direction. I think the reasons for this for Norwich, I mean, you'd know, as much probably more than me, but I just feel that. Both penalty boxes. You look at they've lost Teemu Pukki at the end of last season. Got Ashley Barnes in as a replacement. He's now out long term. You've got Josh Sargent, who's another big, big player in the Norwich attack. He's out as well with that sort of freak injury he picked up at Huddersfield. And in the centre at defence, I just feel there's a lack of sort of leadership and personality. And I think that's where sort of Grant Hanley in the past has come in. He's out long term as well. So I just feel, spine of a side is always very, very, very important. And that may be a bit of an issue at the moment for Norwich. Leeds are sort of going the other way. They did a lot of their business late in the window. So it's understandable they had a bit of a shaky start, but they're really getting going now under, as you well know, Jack, a former Norwich manager in Daniel Farke. They're playing in his typical sort of attacking style of play. They're really, you look at their numbers in matches, they're registering a lot of shots, having a lot of possession and territory and domination, and the results are starting to come. They've won three of the last four games, and odds against, to win here. Norwich have got a good home record, but I would still fancy Leeds to win this one.
I was surprised to see Leeds odds against, Dan, just because of everything you've mentioned there. I guess, is it the home form that's kind of pushing out Leeds'
I
price
think
somewhat?
so. Yeah, I mean, Norwich have won, four of their five home matches, and the exception obviously was against Leicester, who are absolutely, flying at the moment. So you can kind of understand just based on that, why there's odds against for Leeds. But just looking, as I said, about in the last few weeks, the trajectory of the two teams, I just feel that that price is too good to miss.
Daniel Farke's Leeds United first on the list for Dan Charles. Who's up next?
We'll drop into League Two first. Go to Swindon, I fancy, away to Salford. Swindon in sixth place at the moment, Salford 15th. Swindon, both teams would have been expected to be in the promotion wreck. And I mean, it's still time for Salford to get up there, but they've been affected by a lot of injuries in the last sort of couple of months. That's been impacting on their results. They've lost six of their last nine league games. They're kind of the injuries are really, especially in forward areas, they're lacking a lot of options there. Conor McLennan, Callum Hendry, Conor McAlaney, that's three attacking players that have been out injured. A lot of reliance on Matt Smith, the big centre forward who is doing well. He's got nine goals at the moment, but you kind of feel with their opposition, if you can cope with Matt Smith, you can cope with Salford. And Swindon, they've not got that issue. They've got loads of attacking options. Dan Kemp's got eight goals this season. Jake Young, who's on loan from Bradford's got nine. Charlie Austin's only got three so far, but you would think that he's going to hit form at some stage as well. So you look at that firepower Swindon have got, and I mean the price, they're 6-4 to go there and win at Salford, who have not got a great home record. I think that's a really good bet.
Okay, third and final pick for you, Dan.
Third and final, we'll drop into League One. Port Vale, I fancy to get at least some kind of result, a draw or a win away to Stevenage. I mean, these are two teams that sort of started well. They were sort of surprise, sort of early front runners in the division. Both of them have kind of dropped off a bit recently. Port Vale, I mean, they have lost the last three games, but I like to sort of like react to, game by game. And I looked at their last match 2 weeks ago. They lost 2-0. Away to Portsmouth, but according to the reports, it was a very even game. Port Vale actually won the shot count there at Fratton Park, 14-13. So there's a signs there that maybe this sticky patch of theirs won't last very long, and they're taking on Stevenage, I think, at the right time at the moment. Stevenage have lost three of their last four matches under Steve Evans, were beaten 3-0 away at Blackpool last weekend. They've got a few sort of injuries and suspensions at the moment as well, Stevenage. So I just think Port Vale. I don't think there'll be much to choose between the teams, but Port Vale, when you get the draw as well on side, I think is a good bet.
That's great, Dan. Thanks as always.
You're welcome, Jack.
Right, Mark, time to collate some of your best bets for this weekend. Shall we start with a bet builder?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a tricky old week, so playing it a bit safer maybe. So we're going for Liverpool to beat Everton in the Merseyside derby. They've won all of their home games this season. All of them have featured at least three goals, so going to put in over 2.5 goals. And I think Salah is the obvious place to look, for your first goal scorer. Bets really looks in decent nick for sure against Brighton when he got a couple of goals. But I, he scored against West Ham as well. He scored against Villa. He scored against Bournemouth. So yeah, he's doing well at Anfield as well. And when I was at the game when they played with 9 men at Spurs, and even with 10 men, I thought he was a real big threat. And been question marks as to kind of his levels, I think, over the last year, and whether he's still kind of, as good as he once was. I think he is. So yeah, it might be a difficult afternoon for Everton.
I think because there has been, other standout players in the Premier League, we've kind of veered away from bigging up Salah, but his form is just relentless, isn't it? Because even when he doesn't score this season, he's been notching kind of assists. He's
Yeah, he's a threat.
frighteningly good.
Big threat. Obviously, Gakpo's been injured, so there's one less threat there. In terms of the Nunez did well on the international break, but he's obviously been away in South America. It's the Jurgen Klopp absolutely hates it. It's the early kickoff. So how are the South Americans? Not you can't be sure, can you, about Luis Diaz? In terms of that, as well. So yeah, I just felt Salah was the obvious place.
Yeah, great stuff. How about a multiple for this weekend?
Yeah, so just veering off of a treble just because it was coming in quite short. So I'm going to try and get four timer together. Liverpool to beat Everton, Newcastle to beat Crystal Palace, who are struggling with injuries at the moment. I think Manchester United, much like how they beat Burnley in that recent away game, would do a similar job at Bramall Lane. And then my boys in League Two, Stockport,
Yeah, going well.
they are rampant at the moment. And yeah, no stopping them, hopefully, this week, and they can get another 3 points. So Liverpool, Newcastle, Man United, and Stockport.
Brilliant stuff. What's your best bet for this weekend?
I think it's Newcastle to win and under 3.5 goals. Newcastle are a team that I think, if you take out that 8-0 against Sheffield United, I know the Newcastle fans won't want to forget that game, obviously. But if you look at the rest of their Premier League wins, they hammered Aston Villa, didn't they, early on? But I think against a team that's going, and Villa didn't defend the way that Crystal Palace are going to defend. Palace, Ngaihi and Anderson have got two very solid centre halves, decent goalkeeper behind them. So it's going to be difficult for Newcastle to plot a way to goal. I expect their quality to eventually tell, but not in like a wide margin win. And Palace going to be difficult for them to add to the goal tally with Eze out. He's so important to them from a creativity point of view. So yeah, Newcastle to win and under 3.5 goals. So it does give you many options on the Newcastle to win angle up to 3-0. But Palace do score. You've also got the 2-1 playing for you, and I think that sort of 2-1's more likely than say a 4 or 5-0. So yeah, Newcastle and under 3.5 goals.
Mark, excellent. And what does the rest of the week hold for you?
Yeah, not much actually. Got a
No.
clear calendar.
I suspect you're
Norwich got
exhausted
Jack.
from your travel chaos of earlier this week.
Yeah, that's it. Are you watching Norwich?
Yeah, well, I'm feeling rather down about Norwich. We've got Leeds. Daniel Farke returns. We're in horrible form. I mean, the script is kind of written, isn't it? Farke celebrating in front of his new fans. It's kind of like seeing a girl you used to love now with someone else and having a much better time than you are. It's not very nice.
I've not experienced that, Jack, but obviously you have.
Mark, thanks very much as always. A big thanks to Dan Childs as well for his insight on the EFL. Remember, there's been plenty of selections put up on this week's edition of Bets Club. Please don't feel the need to back them all. Only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. We will see you again next Thursday for another episode of Mark Langdon's Bets Club.